How do you dispose of cigarettes?
Well, there's part of plants.
Really? Fertilizer and dried plant roots can catch fire.
Trash cans okay?
Please. All that trash can easily catch fire.
So off my porch is a bad idea.
Cigarettes tossed into mulch, leaves, and grass start many fires. Fire can grow up the side of a building before anyone notices.
Fine. Bucket of sand?
That's perfect. Put it out. All the way. Every time. To learn more, go to mass.gov/DFS.
It's 91.5 WMFO in Medford. And my name is Bill. And this is, are you over there? Are you there? Is your mic on? Yeah, bring it down. Oh, well, that's the first situation. Here, try this one instead.
Well, I hope it doesn't. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, bring it close to you.
Hey, hey.
Hey, that's good. All right, so here we are, and my name's Bill. This is Ebony over here, and we're going to talk a little bit about some other things today. Some of the things I want to talk about are general overall health and other things that are going to help people in some way. The first thing I want to talk about is health for yourself, because the difficult thing to know is how much health you're actually getting from the food that exists. But first, wait, did I tell you about how I got two broken legs and was in the hospital for in rehab for 3 weeks? And then I took enough medicine to make me an addict, but I kicked it because I don't have an addictive personality.
But is that something people choose? An addictive personality.
I don't think it's something people choose, but you can force yourself out of it. The thing I wanted to say today is that we're going to have call-ins. People who want to call the station, we can put you on the air. And this is the first time I've ever done that kind of thing. So the first couple will be tests. But let me tell you about how I broke my leg. So I was biking here in the Boston area, right on the edge of Belmont. There's a Star Market around the corner. And in the back, I was coming down around the hill in the lane, and another person was driving the opposite direction and turning across the lane. But the sun was directly behind me, and I almost missed the person, but they turned so fast and T-boned me directly in the middle of my bike, and I was thrown at least 20 feet into the parking lot, and I rolled a few times, and then when I stood up, I was very angry. Well, actually, when I lifted my head off the ground, I was extremely angry and yelled at this person, were you on the phone? And they were not, but they didn't see me after all, because the sun was behind me, and I didn't know that. And I looked down at my right leg, and it seemed like there was a giant lump in the wrong place.
Oh, no.
After I got to the hospital, it turned out I had a shattered kneecap in 10 pieces. And my left leg had a medial malleolus fracture, which is like the little knuckle that sticks out on the edge of the foot. So that one wasn't too bad. But the kneecap, now look, if this was 100 years ago, I would basically be, done for my life. I couldn't do the things I wanted to do. But they took me to the hospital and put screws and wire in that kneecap, and it brought it all together. And after 3 weeks in the 1 week in the hospital, 3 weeks in rehab, I was home walking on two legs with two crutches and two braces. But they had me walking around outside. It was fantastic.
Let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
So when you put your head up, what was your first thought? I mean, I know you mentioned, asking the driver, like, were you on the phone? But when you realized they weren't, what did you think?
Well, you're angry at that point because the fight or flight response takes over, and you're not flying anywhere. You're just fighting. You're fighting. You want to fight this person because they've hit you. They started the war.
Right.
So you can't do anything but fight. So that's what I wanted to do. But after I saw that they were kind of upset and crying, it was of course an accident. So I stopped doing that.
Man, I don't know what I'd do if that was me. Well, but eventually you still have to get up. You know,
You do. You get up and keep going. And when the best part was when I was in the hospital, I was still lucid enough to like investigate lawyers on my cell phone. And I
no, that was fight. That was fight for real.
I found out that it wasn't worth it, so we did things out of court with just insurance companies. But when I was in the hospital, they took an MRI of my brain, and they gave me the data on my on a disc, and I looked at it on my computer. So I have a three-dimensional movie about my brain, and I can see there's maybe like 20 or 30 slides of this MRI.
Why would they do that? An MRI of your brain?
They wanted to get my neck and shoulders to be sure I didn't have any broken neck.
Got it.
And the thing that I saw in the center of my brain was this bright white spot that looked like a bone. And I thought, this can't be a bone in the middle of my brain. So while I was there in the hospital bed, I looked up the center of the brain, and this problem, it's a calcified pineal gland. Your pineal gland shapes the hormones that give you sleep and relaxation, and it's also called the third eye. It's people see it as the seat of consciousness and the seat of your soul connection to the universe. And this has been calcified in my head. And I didn't want extra bones in my head. I mean, my head's thick as a rock anyway. So I looked up what that problem was, and it seems that the chemicals in the water tend to do that. So after I got out of the hospital, I got a water filter that filters out arsenic and chlorine and fluoride and mercury, and once I did that, after 6 weeks, I felt a fundamental difference in my approach to the world. It was a definitely a change in the way that I perceived things on a regular day-to-day basis, and I think that's the most important thing that you can do first, is to have a water filter and not get bottled water, because some of it's tap water, some of it is just filtered tap water, and some of it is just barely has anything in it. But the filtered water that using an intense filter, the first thing to get, the best thing to get would be a deionized, or sorry, not deionized, a very heavy duty water filter that goes under your sink. Mm-hmm. But since I live in an apartment, I couldn't do that. So I got a standalone tank, and it's called the Berkey filter. It's got two separate filters. First, a charcoal, black ceramic charcoal filter, and then under it, a diatomaceous earth filter that then gets the arsenic and the fluoride. And that's why I got it. And this is the best tasting water I've ever had. When I lived in Cambridge, which I don't know, but when I did, they had the best water. But now, after having this filtered water, it's definitely the best, because what's in your pipes? All these houses around here are very old. There's chemicals that have been leaching into them for 100 years or more, and you need to avoid those and keep them out of your system. So now, I've been talking for much too long. Ebony, tell me what you think.
So when you talk about the filtered water stuff, I just got to say, I was one of those people that lived and breathed bottled water. I also don't like the idea of tap water, just because, like you said, it's Boston. Those houses are old. We don't know what's in the pipes. But then you have bottled water, and the thought is, all this plastic, what happens after we're done with it, you know, because you're just drinking it and throwing it away, and the hope is that someone's going to recycle it. But do they really? Because I still see a couple of this, you know, plastics in the oceans, killing fish, killing all this stuff. So yeah, I do agree with you. The idea of filtering your own water is is a good one.
Yeah, the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. There's all these plastic bottles are created with more water than you're actually eating when you buy them. And the markup on water is something like 2,000% more than if you were to drink the same water from the tap, because Dasani water is directly from the taps of, I think, Cincinnati or something, and or actually a multitude of them, depending on their bottling plant, and it's just tap water. But they charge you 2,000% more than it would be in your own tap.
Because my folks actually produce bottled water. And their competitors are actually, you know, Dasani, which is a Coca-Cola product. I don't know if you know that.
Yes, it is.
But the way they make their water, it's literally like the byproduct of, after they've made the sodas and all those drinks, a part of the byproduct is water. And what they do with that water is they bottle it and sell it. Now it's Dasani, so yeah, you're right. It's, they're making a profit on something that technically would be, you know, like a waste product, and here we are consuming it.
And there's waste products that are put in a pile in the middle of land that is then just allowed to filter into the water table. Industrial byproducts and things like that. So now let's give out the number in case people want to call. The number for WMFO is 855-915-WMFO or 855-915-9636. And you can call from anywhere in the world and or Skype in at MFO-DJ. Now,
let us know what you think about bottled.
Well, the important thing is the chemicals, because after I started doing that, I worked at farmers markets at the time. I was working for a company that runs a bunch of farmers markets in the area, and I got to know the farmers and how they grow food and how they transport food and the entire process. There's more than just the individual farmers. There's the producers and the workers in the fields, but some of them use neonicotinoid pesticides, and these are derived from nicotine from cigarettes. And in 2013, there was a Harvard study that showed out of 180 honey samples from Massachusetts, I think it was like more than 75% of them had neonicotinoids in them, and it's a pesticide. So how can we avoid this? The best thing to do is, for me, I wanted to avoid all chemicals. The more I learned about it, and the more I reduced chemicals in my diet, the better I felt. And I felt like a rocket ship. It was a slow process, but now, at this point in my life, after learning how to take several different kinds of vitamins and getting rid of chemicals, having only organic vegetables and high-quality protein, then you just feel like a million times better, because your body wants to survive. It's constantly living and growing and wanting to do best for you. So if you give it the right beginnings, it's going to make that better for you and get the bad stuff out of your system.
But is it possible for everybody to do this? I ask because the reason, you know, farmers or anyone that's producing, you know, produce has to consider using pesticides or fertilizers or all these things with chemicals in them is because you're trying to mass produce, right? I mean, we don't have enough land to grow produce for everybody. So we have to use, you know, the space that we have and make it work with the millions of people on Earth. And so is it possible, you know, to produce food without having to use chemicals?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's a pretty heavy duty question. I don't think I can answer that. But I think what you can do is choose to avoid them if you can. You know, the farmers markets all match EBT. So if you have EBT, you can get double your money. And part of my process was years ago, after I had been hit by a car and got two broken legs, I saw this movie while I was laid up called Supersize Me. And this guy, Morgan Spurlock, went around the country and ate at McDonald's constantly for 30 days, mm-hmm. every meal. And at the end of it, his doctor said, look, you've got to stop. You're dying. you're getting worse. And he found out that in the McDonald's burgers, there was a certain allowance for rat excrement. Because in the process of creating these burgers, it's a factory. And so rats live there. So you have to allow for a certain amount of that. And so there is that in the McDonald's burger. So, you know, I think the first thing you should probably do is avoid that. So by not having it to begin with.
Right.
And then after you do that, you can start to release any chemicals from your diet. So you look on a box of something, if it's got more than, you know, the more ingredients it has in it, the worse it is for you, I think.
Well, they usually say if you can't read the ingredients, then it's not good for you.
Yes. And the chemicals are made by a company for profit. So you're just paying them. You're giving them profit. Why not pay yourself? Pay yourself by getting the ingredients with the lowest the lowest amount of chemicals in them, and then making it yourself. It takes a lot of extra time for me. It takes almost an hour for lunch and dinner to make, but that's my trade-off.
Time is money. Time is money.
Yeah. So what do you do for, what was it like, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Nairobi.
In Nairobi, Kenya?
Yeah.
So how are the agriculture and food different there than here?
Wow, that's a loaded one. It is night and day, actually. So in Nairobi, organic food is cheaper, is more prevalent, mostly because there isn't a lot of, should I call it industrialization? Yeah, like people don't use a lot of machines to grow crop. It's still done on small scale. It's still done by, you know, individuals. And then these individuals will take that food to the market and sell it. And like here where, you know, there's like farms and farms and acres of farmland rather. So it's easier to get your hands on organic food, and the food that's grown with chemicals, now that's expensive stuff because you have to, you know, factor in for pesticides and fertilizers and herbicides and all that stuff. So, you know, there's a cost factor to it. Yeah, that's what I'd say. That's a big difference.
So in Kenya, the organic food is cheaper than the chemical-laden food.
That's correct.
That's fascinating. So no wonder you were, from the pictures I've seen of you, you look so happy and healthy.
Wait, what are you saying? And I'm not happy and healthy right now?
No, of course you
are. I am happy and healthy, people. Don't don't be fooled.
The interesting thing is that there's so many farmers growing
in Nairobi,
in your town, because that's how a lot of people make their living.
Make their money, yeah.
And it's just a generally lower kind of need for that amount of money to live, right?
Exactly. And because it's small scale, you know, whatever's grown within a season has to sell, or most likely sells. It isn't like keeping, you know, storing for the next season. And so that means there's also like not enough food, to be honest, because, you know, the number of people who are growing versus the number of people who actually need to be fed is not it's not the same, you know. There's fewer people. I mean, if you look at the population, there's, you know, I guess like what, about maybe 40% of the population is actually farming, but then you have the 60% that you need to feed. So sometimes it doesn't work out. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, that makes sense. And so in general, the people are, would you say they're generally healthier than you can see as a population in Nairobi versus the general health of the population here in Boston area? However, the dense urban area, you see less unhealthy people, actually. When I was traveling all around the country, I could see that there were more unhealthy people in the suburbs than here in the city.
I mean, so there's a lot. That's a very layered question, because when you look at health in terms of, you're talking about like stuff like obesity or
yes.
stuff like that. So Nairobi or Kenya is basically a third world. No, it's not a third world country. It's it is technically a third world country.
Third stream, I think.
I don't know what they call it these days, but I still remember it was third world. And what that means is people there don't have like a lot of luxuries. Like people are still struggling to get basic needs, you know? And so because of that, you're more likely to see people who are more malnutritioned as opposed to obese, just because, you know, scarcity of food, like I mentioned. So people are not healthy in terms of, they're not obese, but they're malnutrition.
The
yes, yeah. It's the opposite. So I mean, I guess it just depends. There's a lot of things that go into, you know, what
health,
the general
yes.
health of a population is the economy, that, you know, plays into that.
Well, I found that one thing worked for me after I was hit by that car and got two broken legs. I figured out that I needed to get really good nutrition. So I started taking a multivitamin, and then I started taking biotin, and then and then I started taking this great thing called NAD.
It's, what's NAD?
NAD is like fertilizer for your body's cells. It's like giving you extra energy, and it takes the years off your cells. It rejuvenates the telomeres at the end of your DNA, so it basically makes you seem like you're younger than you are. It's amazing. And once since I started taking that,
do people in LA know about this?
Oh, I'm sure they do. The people in the know will know. And once I started taking that, I noticed that on my bike rides, I got a new bike, by the way, and I got back out there.
Woo.
My bike energy increased. Like when I got tired, I tried a little harder and I had even more energy than when I started. It was
Brian,
like a rocket ship.
NAD. How sure are you that's not a factor of just, you know, biking for a long time, getting
it's
a better
good question.
Bike?
I don't know. I mean,
maybe.
It could be a lot of other things. But to me, it seems like the correlation is real. All right, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Baby's good to me, you know she's happy as can be, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. Baby says she's mine, you know she tells me all the time, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's my little girl. She's so glad she's telling the whole world that her baby buys her things, you know. He buys her diamond rings, you know she said so. She's in love with me and I feel fine. Baby says she's mine, you know she tells me all the time, you know she said so. I'm in love with her and I feel fine. I'm so glad that she's my little girl. She's so glad she's telling all the world that her baby buys the things, you know. He buys her diamond rings, you know she said so. She's in love with me and I feel fine. She's in love with me and I feel fine.
Feel fine with the extra vitamins in your system. Now, part of the people that I was talking about that helped me are Dr. Andrew Weil. He has an anti-inflammatory pyramid on his website, and that website is drweil.com, 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 and he's very helpful on many elements of the healthy lifestyle. Another person who's very helpful, you've probably heard of him, Michael Pollan, the Omnivore's Dilemma book. His motto is eat real food, not too much, mostly plants. So if you keep that in mind, you know, you have a giant plate of vegetables and a little bit of fish or meat or chicken or something like that, and you'll feel much better. And I've done that deliberately for years, and I've lost 20% of my body weight. I used to be 240 pounds. Now I am 190.
Yeah, he looks good.
Hey, look, we don't know each other that well. Now, relax.
Take the compliment, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now let's move on to something else because, I'm an amateur at this talking about this, but I do listen to a lot of things, and this might be something people want to talk about at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. Some of the people I've been listening to lately are Glenn Greenwald, fantastic journalist who broke the WikiLeaks story with Julian Assange, and a lot of the Joe Rogan podcast on Spotify. Spotify is a website and a phone app, and you can find the podcast there with Joe Rogan. Glenn Greenwald tweets a lot of things and still writes a bunch of things for different media outlets. Now, the what's hard to know is what is true? What is real fundamental truth?
Is there truth?
Is there? Maybe there isn't. But we can get close to it. And what's the difference between just reporting events and telling you how to think about them? I think it's the difference between reality and propaganda.
That's true. And I think everybody has their truth.
Yes, but let's talk about telling people the truth in general across a society, which is has usually been the perceived job of media and reporters and news disseminators. And these days, television, newspapers, everything's gone to the internet, which needs people to, and if you're a money-making news operation, you need people to click on your story, or
that's
at least
right.
Look at it and keep your eyes on the page so you can go to the advertisers, because they still make money with advertising. So the more you look at it, the more money they make. So they make these headlines that seem completely
flashy.
Outrageous. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's like tabloid version of stuff, like the Daily News and the News of the World are tabloids in England. And they always almost make up things. They've very well known for making up quotes directly, just the editor saying, well, let's have a story about such and such doing this. And then the writer writes it and makes it up and writes up the quotes. And it's almost like fiction. But there's nothing in there because there's no libel laws in England. So the paper can print almost anything that's not completely, you know, disturbing, and they can get away with it. Whereas here, in most of the rest of the world, there are libel laws, and so we need proof of things here in America, so there's, to a degree, more responsibility. But there's still an area to disseminate just barely false things. And this all started from about 25 years ago, in the middle of the 90s, there was the I forget the name of it exactly, but there was a consolidation of media ownership. So in the past, only one person could only own one radio station in a city and one newspaper in a city. But that was changed, and then many outlets could be owned by the same person or corporation. So that led to a consolidation of newsrooms and a consolidation of ideas and a consolidation of jobs, actually. They could have one person here in a studio like this reading all the messages that would go out across the country for the same radio network. And then about 2 or 3 years ago, actually, I'm sorry, I think it was 2012, I'm not sure exactly, but President Obama signed into law allowing propaganda in the United States on media networks. So in the past, it was specifically prohibited from having propaganda, but now you're allowed to have propaganda. And what is propaganda? But a way of adjusting your mind so that you don't even know. So this is a great joke. My friend from China told me this joke. It was the beginning of the college year. There were three or four people sitting around the college cafeteria, and they were saying what they did. Jim was an English major. Tanya was a theater major with an English minor. And Chen was from China, and she said, yes, I'm here to study American propaganda and understand how it works and bring it back to my country. And then Tim said, what? There's no propaganda in America. Oh, yeah, that kind.
Oh.
And that's what we have now. And so it's not everywhere, but when it is there, you don't know.
But how do you, and that's the thing, how do you tell this is propaganda and this is not?
Well, you have to know psychology and be trained in, well, not trained, but you basically have to adjust your thinking so that you are a step ahead, so that you understand psychology to the degree that these people do. Because it's been 100 years of starting with Freud and kind of moving on into Jung and into more cutting edge things, where scientific research shows how people react to certain things in their brain, And that is used either for advantage or disadvantage, depending on your rationale and your interests. So if I am a corporation who has an interest in selling more chemicals, then I will use anything I can afford for information to further that interest.
The thing that's sad about this is the sophistication that's being used in all this, because I can give you an example. During the last elections in Kenya, there was a whole saga with Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yep.
And it was just, you know, leaders using Facebook because they know that majority of, you know, the population's on Facebook and spending a lot of time on this platform.
Mm-hmm.
And just pumping a lot of false information in here, you know, to swing the sentiment, the general sentiment, you know, towards a certain candidate. And for me, the surprising thing is how effective this was, because people read this stuff and believe it, and now they're talking about it, you know, like it is a truth. And if you don't believe in it, you are the enemy. And it's a question of, can we just take a step and, you know, just think that just because you don't believe in my truth does not mean that you don't like me or, you know, you're the enemy, whatever that is. And it was bad because it brought violence. And this is like at a republic level, at a state level.
What kind of violence?
A country. I mean, there was just some tension and, you know, there were isolated cases here and there of, you know, husbands beating their wives, or husbands beating their kids because, you know, maybe these kids don't believe in this candidate that you so believe in, you know, that much. So that just that conviction that you can turn against your own and be able to, you know, lay a hand just because you disagree with them.
Wait,
the
family was beating the husband was beating his kids because they didn't believe in the candidate?
Oh, the wife, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, the Cambridge Analytica was found to be very involved with the Trump election. Yes. And in, I think it was also in the UK. But you've probably seen that movie on Netflix about
social media.
Yes, the social media, the social network, uh-huh. Showing the dangers and addictions that the owners of the network use, how they use psychology to their advantage. So in that regard, there's more of that being used in corporate America today than ever before. Now, the elections in other countries have always been manipulated by the United States for the past 50, 70 years, ever since World War II. Not all of them, and not all the time, but there has been manipulation, especially, for example, in Pinochet in Peru. Was it Peru? Pinochet in the 70s in Peru, he was put in there by the CIA, and then when he didn't do what they wanted, they bombed him out. And the same thing happened basically with Manuel Noriega in Panama. They got him out of there because he wasn't doing what they wanted. So what I wonder is, if it's done around the country, why is it not done in this country? I mean, it probably has been, right?
That's the thing. The sophistication just makes it, you know, hard to tell to the normal eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with electronic voting machines, where it's been proven that they can be hacked easily in a
Anything
court.
Anything that can be connected to the internet can be hacked for sure. So.
And you know that.
Yeah.
The Trump election was basically won by, I think, like half a dozen districts in one state. They all were swung by just enough to tip them over in that one little state, in that one little district, so that the whole state eventually turned for Trump. And I think that is a very easy thing to do. You take a bunch of, there's only so many towns in the country, so you look at each town, you look at how many voting machines they have, and you just pick certain voting machines and you count them, you know, negative. You make their total amount the same, but you say now it starts negative 100 for your opponent and positive 100 for the person you're after, and the total amount is still zero. So it starts out as zero. That's how it's been hacked.
I don't think you even need to get to that point now. I mean, this day is all you need to do is run a story against your opponent, and then just, because the thing is, you know who's using Facebook, Instagram, all these things, right? and you know, maybe you might know that this person's kind of neutral. I don't know. You can get this data. It's out there. And you just pump them with information that's, you know, kind of leaning towards one side, and have them read it over and over again.
Oh, you mean on Facebook or some other thing?
Exactly. So
you mean to an individual person?
Right. Wow. Or a group of people. Yeah, you can do that. I mean, because Facebook has this data, you know, they can build a profile of this person, even if there isn't any identifiable information, right? You live in this place. This is your age. This is the people you typically talk to. So this is the general age of, you know, I guess your network. And so you have like a whole database of, you know, women who are between 18 and 36, who have one kid or who have a couple of kids, you know, build on the entire profile, and then now you can push your agenda towards this demographic.
I think that's definitely done, but then to top it off, the cherry on the sundae is what I was saying about conning the voting machines. Yeah.
That's what I said. Like, you don't even, I feel like you don't even have to go that far, because anyway, it depends, because some people are willing to, you know, bend.
If you're looking to go a little ways, you can go all the way. I think
we'll see.
There are people who are not like you and me, and or you listening. They are not like you, and they will do anything by any means necessary, or if they won't, then they'll find somebody who will. Now, another thing that was interesting to me was the freethoughtproject.com. Thefreethoughtproject.com. Thought is spelled normally T-H-O-U-G-H-T. Thefreethoughtproject.com. And to avoid the corporate media, it takes a lot of time. I haven't paid for cable television for like 8 years or more. And so I haven't watched, you know, more than 60 seconds of CNN or any other thing for that time. And once you get off of it, then you can kind of see how things are being manipulated. There's a giant screen. It's got words on the bottom. It's got a crazy flashing people with a million different, with 10 different people in the same screen. And there's three layers of scrolling text and things that don't make any interest or any connection to each other. So it's really to get you off guard and to make you think that everything is kind of off and strange, and it makes everyone think that everything's wrong, when in fact, we live in the best possible time in human history.
True.
This place and time that we live in is absolutely the most forward thinking and safe time that has ever existed. It's both statistically proven, and if you can just kind of breathe in the air, you can see that it is. I mean, look at the stuff we have.
I got a question for you.
Me?
Yeah. Are you excited for, I don't know, the possibilities? I mean, you did mention this is the best time, and I guess it only gets better from here. Do you want to live in the time when we'll have all this driverless cars and food delivery will be done via drones? And
well, look, I would, but what are the costs? Because there is kind of an overarching kind of negative connotation all of that by knowing all of your information. Do you want privacy? I think you do. But
or
are you like slowly shown to get rid of your privacy one little step at a time, one little shave of carrot? If you're peeling carrots, you just peel it one at a time, and if you do it slow enough and shallow enough, you don't even notice that you're missing the whole carrot after a while.
Or do you want convenience?
Yeah,
you can give us your data, and we'll make life easier for you.
Well, now you grew up in Kenya. What kind of media landscape is there? Do you have like a giant amount of networks, or just a few, or they seem to be corporate? Are they interested in people?
So for one, there isn't too many outlets, I guess.
How many TV stations are there?
I can count less. Okay, the big ones, I can count less than 10. And then there's a couple, you know, vernacular ones that are more localized, you know, to like specific regions. Because the other thing you have to remember is there's 42 tribes in Kenya. Hmm. And not everybody speaks English.
Are there 42 languages?
Yeah. So that means that, you know, some some media outlets need to cater for that specific group. So because of that, just if you want to share a number, yes, there is, I guess, more than 20. But that's not as much if you compare it to what's here.
More than 20 TV stations.
Yeah, yeah.
But how many people live in Kenya?
42 million.
So about
40 million.
About California, a little more than California.
There you go.
Well, so.
But it's the same. I think media is the same. So it's, for one, you will find a couple of journalists who are interested in, you know, publishing the truth and, you know, what really happened. But then there's a government influence that goes into what people actually get to know. And mm-hmm. it's at least here, you feel like it's a bit hidden. Like the government wouldn't, you know, come up front and make it obvious like we are trying to regulate what you watch.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and this is my perception, I'm not going to talk about all the other 42 million Kenyans, but the government there has more leeway in terms of what can be reported. And if you report something that, you know, they don't like, yes, it will be brought in down. It will be brought down. But you as a journalist may have, you know, consequences against either yourself or your family, that kind of thing. So,
whoa,
there is.
So you're saying the media is more controlled in Kenya?
It's more
from
controlled,
a government perspective.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to make it sound very gloomy. Yeah, sometimes the truth does come out. Sometimes it does. But I feel like there's a lot more that we never get to know. That could be shared, but it won't come out because, you know, somebody got a call and they were told you cannot publish that.
Yeah, that still happens to a degree here. Like, for example, in the New York Times would get calls from the president to not publish certain things, but it was generally on the national security idea, not from the personal idea, because in the journalist just wouldn't publish anything personal about the president at all.
It's not personal that they are publishing. Maybe it could be something like so I remember there was a time some prominent guy went missing for a while, and apparently rumor had it that, you know, the government had something to do with it, right? And so they were trying to this journalist was trying to report, you know, about this story and how this guy went missing. And he did publish it, actually, but there were consequences because he came out later and he was like, yeah, I'm getting death threats. My family is getting death threats.
Yeah.
And we had to, you know, like move to a different country. So.
And it's because of the subject matter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Here in America, they're not threats. It's just a cutout.
Oh,
when it's a corporate thing, uh-huh. if you're getting close to the moneymaker on a corporate item, mm-hmm. then you do get whispers and kind of ideas. But there was a journalist, Michael Hastings, was investigating. Who is he investigating? I think. I want to say it's Pfizer or Moderna or something like that. But mm-hmm. That's just my mind. But he was investigating maybe it was Monsanto. But his car was a modern Mercedes, mm-hmm. and it was hacked by remote control and driven at 100 miles an hour into a tree. He died.
Oh, no.
And that's what can happen if you are getting too close. So, but it's really...
Would you take the risk?
Well, I mean, it's hard to know because how are you getting to... where is the exposition going to occur?
I would,
you know,
not.
If it's a very tiny kind of thing, if it's amongst a few people, then nobody cares. It's not going to go anywhere. But if you're a journalist who's making a book and really getting into the harmful things that can be published and last for research purposes forever, then I think that's probably where the hitmen draw the line.
Uh-huh. I see.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
She's got a ticket to ride. and she don't care.
WMFO Medford, and we're going to continue to talk about that a little bit, I think, because the question is, how do you know when you're being lied to, and how do you know what is actually going on? So when the corporations
can I just cut you off a minute there? You don't.
You don't. How? But do you want to? Don't you want to?
I mean, I think what you got to do is just have an open mind and look at different viewpoints. And then once you have multiple viewpoints, then think for yourself. Like, you can't let corporations think for you. You can't just take information and then go out and regurgitate it as your own if you haven't, you know, put any thought into it.
Mm-hmm. But how do the people who are doing that also seem the most informed? How are you able to make a wise decision for your own self? I think you just have to look at, like, real world data and then go with your informed decision, but know that what you are in your own soul and go for in that direction.
That's true. Eventually, I think we're all self-serving one way or another. So we're always looking for something that agrees with our viewpoint, you know?
Now, what about vaccines? Because these days, everybody it seems... Mm-hmm. Like people are very aggressive towards them, and it's causing a rift. People get very negative and very positive about them, and it's a very dividing thing.
I know. Who would have thought, huh?
Why? I mean, up until now, you got the flu vaccine, you don't. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You got the measles, you don't. You know, it's your life. You can do what you want.
I think it because it depends with the situation that we find ourselves in. I'm not sure, but I suspect when the flu was a big deal in the 80s, and you know, it was life or death or whatever it was at that point, there must have been a divide too.
Well, there was never
Did
it was
think?
Never life and death, but there have been points when there has been very dangerous diseases like polio and smallpox, for example. And yes, that's functionally a very dangerous disease. But the one we find ourselves in now, the big cold, is only dangerous for the very old.
But I think because people have died,
It
still is life and death.
Yes, right? But only because it's being shouted out there for the benefit of the corporations that are paying the bills for the media companies. So if the COVID vaccines have been the biggest moneymaker in pharmaceutical company history for the past 100 years, and it's just been the past like 1 year or 8 months that they've been available.
But what if it's a loud topic because we've had to all go home and sit there, and the economy was in a standstill. But people wanted to get back outside and live their lives and, you know, go back to whatever was normal to them.
Yeah.
What if it was that? What if it was just not the profit? If that was also a big factor?
If what was a big factor?
Think about this. January of last year, we all had this plans for, 2020?
Yeah.
We all had these plans. I want to do this. I want to go to this place. And then February rolls in, March, and suddenly everything has to be shut down and everyone has to go back home. And so it's
because of fear. The fear that got into the people who make decisions, and they want to do it based on appearances. They wanted to seem like they knew what they were doing, and they went down to the lowest common emotional denominator, which is always save grandma. And that's what politicians will do, is they'll cut to the basic reptile level of your brain and say, we've got to do that.
Not necessarily, because there was this disease that was spreading very quickly through the air, and there wasn't data on who's catching it and who's not and who's dying and who's not. And it's a matter of, we need to put this under control, right? What is the best way to do that? You just got to lock people in and be like, fine, you go in, and then we'll figure out who's at risk and who's not. And once we know what's going on, then we can make a game plan from there.
It was known what was going on in the beginning, because the very first data showed that it was a 0.2% fatality rate, and only amongst the very old. And that has not changed. It's still exactly that way. It's still basically everybody is going to be fine. There is nothing to worry about.
Way. When it started, I mean, who was the president then? Trump was the president, right? And China went into lockdown, and America was still,
nobody knew what was going on.
People can still keep traveling, and it's okay. It's going to be fine, right? But then time kept going, and suddenly it's not only old people that were dying; young people were dying too.
But only a small amount of them. But just because it's called something like survivorship bias or attention bias, when you see something that seems very extreme, but it's put under a microscope, then you're much more apt to think that it's important. But in fact, as a statistic, which, by the way, you and I are just statistics also, the statistics show that everybody under the age of 75 is very safe, and under 60 is extraordinarily safe. So nobody has anything to worry about. So, but the point is that by having a investor like Bill Gates say that everybody should get vaccinated, makes money for him, and it makes money for vaccine companies. And what if the cable television companies didn't get 98% penetration like they did at the heyday of cable? They always needed more customers. And now with vaccines, what are the customers? There's 7 billion of them. So you get the money from that. First you get the power, then you get the money. Then
so who's got the power in this scenario?
Corporations pay lobbyists to make laws that are favorable to them in the government, and then things. But now we've got to wrap up because it's a few minutes. But now we got to this point where you wonder, what can we do about it? And the best thing you can do about it is understand that it's really got nothing to do with you. And what you have for under your own control is your own wisdom and actions towards other people. And I think the guiding force is that everyone is fundamentally made of the same thing. Everybody is the same, which we've seen in countless places. Everybody is made up of love in the middle of it all.
True.
So you just spread that out there, and you give it to everybody else.
That's true. Folks, stay safe. Whatever you believe in, just know that someone else might believe in something different. But we can all get along. So.
But we're all part of the same thing. And if you extend that idea that, you know, you're supposed to do the golden rule, you're supposed to treat people like you want to be treated.
Sure.
And so you're treating someone else like you. Mm-hmm. So if you extend that to the logical conclusion, like they do in Buddhist traditions, you're treating everybody else like you. Mm-hmm. Therefore, everybody is you. Mm-hmm. You are in everyone else. And so everyone is part of you. Every single person is you.
That's true. And I guess if we all did that, you know, you're right. We treat each other well because we're treating ourselves well.
The last thing I want to mention is a couple of people have been very helpful to me to get to this point. Jordan Peterson is a fantastic intellectual and author. He's got hundreds of hours of classroom talk from his professor, from his class that he teaches as a professor in Toronto, University of Toronto. But his book is 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. That's Jordan Peterson. And
what's the first rule? Yes, 12 rules.
I don't have them in front of me. Brett Weinstein and Heather Hying are a married couple, who wrote a new book called A Hunter-Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century. And his website is brettweinstein.net. That's WEINSTEIN, Brett with one T, BRET, brettweinstein.net. And I want to thank you very much, Ebony, for coming in today.
Pleasure. I loved it.
We'll talk more the next time, or maybe less.
More. Maybe more.
Okay. Love you.
Love you too.
Have a good night. Bye.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. They give me all kinds of warnings, save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. But surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. Well, they give me all kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. Tell them that I'm fine watching the shadows on the wall. Oh, don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here making the wheels go round and round and rock the Boston road. No longer riding on the merry-go-round. I just have to let it go. People asking questions, lost in confusion. Well, I tell them there's no problem, only solution. Well, they shake their heads and they look at me as if I've lost my mind. I tell them there's no hurry, I'm just sitting here doing time. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the I just had to let it go.
Kids have the craziest ideas about food. Where do they get this stuff? Like eating Brussels sprouts helps you hit home runs. And eating carrots gives you